This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. It's time to step up to the plate with Jim, Steve, Fish, and former two-time Gold Glover World Series champion, Benji Molina.
A swing and a miss, and that's the winner! That's the winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!
Ranger, that is! In the left field, September 3000, a run is scored!
Smith corks one into right down the line. It may go! Go crazy, folks! Go crazy!
A high pop ball! The Clover's there! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant!
Breeze hits it in the air to center. We will see you tomorrow night.
Swing and a miss! The Cardinals are world champions for 2006.
In the air to left, well hit. Back is Craig. What a team. What a ride. The Cardinals are world champs in 2011.
Hello, Cardinal fans, and welcome to this week's edition of Ruffled Feathers, brought to you right here by Two Birds on a Bat. And we are coming to you live tonight from the Patio Studio. Patio is the original party place for St. Louis Cardinal fans everywhere. Since 1998, pre or post game, Patio has been the original party place for St. Louis Cardinals fans, and I'm sure they're getting everything ready to go. And hopefully we'll all be visiting that place very, very, very soon. This show is brought to you by Innovative Companies, with a special thanks to our good friend Randy Green. Residential, commercial, or industrial, Innovative Companies has you covered. Don't forget the 15% discount for all military and first responders. The construction, electrical, or heating and cooling teams are ready to tackle any project. That's our good friends at InnovatedCompanies.com. All right, well, we have a bit of back and forth going on between MLB owners and MLB players. And so the very real possibility now that we get some kind of line of sight to when the season could potentially start, how many games they'll be played, under what kind of terms. So there's a lot to discuss, and who knows how it's all going to end up there soon. So look, it's a distracting time when you're a sports fan and you don't have sports, and I don't mean distracting in a negative way. There's just a lot going on in this world. Most of us have been shut up for about 3 months into our homes, working from home, or we're doing our jobs, heading out every day, taking on a little bit more risk and uncertainty. And now we've got, you know, the situation that's happening all around the country with the protests and a lot of pain, a lot of anger. And it's, you know, talking about baseball tonight was harder than it usually is, because I think our attention, and for the right reasons, is elsewhere. But we are going to unplug from that briefly. Joining me tonight, since Jim Cromer could not join the show today, this is, by the way, I'm Ron Nuttall. If you recognize my voice, usually you hear me at the other end of a cell phone and not so much a microphone, but I'm going to take the reins here tonight and give you an edition of Ruffled Feathers this week. So I have brought in, from Birds on the Black, Zach Gifford, as well as from Redbird Rants, and a blogger right here on the Two Birds bloggers, and that would be Russ Robinson. Gentlemen, thank you so much for taking time out tonight to talk to me on this week's show. Zach, I know this is not the first time we've talked. We had you on, I can't even remember what podcast it was at that time. I've done like three or four of them over the last 3 years. I'm pretty sure it was if it wasn't the Cards on Deck, it was the Cardinals Nation 24/7 podcast. And I can't quite recall which one it was.
Yeah.
Good to talk to you again.
I think it was the 24/7. And that was probably the last time. You're saying before, it's been a while since you used Hangouts. That was probably that might have been the last time.
It was close to the last time. Yeah, it's funny because I don't use this very often, but the sound comes through pretty clean. But it was towards the end of my old Google Hangouts run there for both the other podcasts that I'd done at the time. So the other person on the line is Russ Robinson. You know him as Uncle Frank on Twitter. He writes for Two Birds on the Bat bloggers. So for Russ, I almost called you Frank. Russ, you were the old one of my old colleagues there on the Cards on Deck when we ran that, and Cardinals Nation 24/7 for a long period of time. And I know we had you on a show or two. I believe that you appeared on one of Brian's and as well as one as the flagship. So great to talk to you again, too. And I know we've all stayed connected in some way, shape, or form over the last couple of years. So it's great to have you guys on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Brian. I appreciate it.
any time. All right, so let's get down to it. You know, several weeks ago, we knew that the owners had agreed on a proposal. And that proposal, 7 to 10 days later, made its way to the players. And I think as, probably to none of our surprise, and I don't want to speak for you guys, because if you were surprised at the players' reaction, I certainly want to hear. Players didn't respond to that very well. And that's when we talked about this issue on the show last week. The players have, I don't know if official counter has been handed over, but we've kind of seen the terms of it. And so I just want to go real quick here. Are you surprised at anything here? Do you feel like there's progress being made, or do you see a mile-wide gap that's just not going to be closed? Is there any non-starters, Zach, that you see that's going to prevent anything like this from happening? I know there's a lot of moving parts here, a lot of pieces that could shake it up, but just kind of what's your gut feeling after reading what you've been able to read today?
I think the owners coming back at 40 to 50 games is a little confusing to me. So obviously, like, they're worried about covering losses. I think their 40 to 50 would keep an expanded postseason, so there would be kind of more revenue kick at the end of the year. But based on what I was reading, so it sounds like they kind of threw these terms out. It hasn't officially been proposed, but the last time they did this with the revenue split, the official proposal didn't come for another 2 weeks or so. What's I think maybe the weirdest thing for me with this proposal is just the timing. If we're looking at a July 1st start, you got to get an agreement probably this week. So the fact that, like, an official proposal is not out there yet, there's still, yeah, the difference between what they're proposing and what the players are proposing in terms of games, the gap is about 60. So the players are at about 110, owners are at about 50. So that's a huge gap to bridge. Maybe they jump to the middle at 81, 82, and we can do something around that. But it definitely seems like the owners, at least in terms of season length, are worried about a second wave of the virus in fall causing more disruptions. But it also seems like they think they just have kind of unilateral power at this point, if they wanted to enforce a season of any length based on the agreement that they signed or they made with the players in March. It sounds like the Players Association agreed that they would play for prorated salaries at whatever length of season the owners would go for. So I don't know. Maybe the cost to stage a game is enormous, but I would think that owners would benefit by playing more games than 40 or 50. It's just weird to me. I don't know. I think we're closer. Like, they're at least both making offers. I thought that we might get to kind of a stalemate when the players came back and the owners were proposing the revenue split. I was worried that we were just going to get to a point where they were going to kind of stalemate and see who moved first. So it's encouraging that they're still moving. But I don't know that they're, like, really moving any closer.
Hey, Russ, one thing I thought about here, and thank you, Zach, just for your thoughts on that. The shortness of a season, 40 to 50 games, is a little surprising. You know, I think I understand, you know, financially that's the risk that they're comfortable with assuming at this point. But Russ, don't you think that there'll be a handful of players perhaps will find this, gosh, is it even worth playing this year? It's such a short season. What if I blow out an elbow? What if I blow out an ACL? I mean, isn't that kind of that's a risk no matter when they're playing, right? But do you see any of the higher profile players maybe stepping away and say, you know what? 40, 50 games is not worth this to me. I've got a long-term deal. Take somebody like Garrett Cole, who's in the first year of a long-term deal. Is it worth it?
Well, I kind of agree with you, Ron. I'm not sure it's worth it. I'm bearish about us having a season this year. I've become that way. You know, when this thing first started, I was thinking, you know, I just didn't think with the way this virus worked and that they would ever get the season in. But Rob Manfred kept saying, we're going to play baseball, we're going to play baseball. And then he said, then he came out with this, when they blended the leagues in or rebooted the leagues where everybody was in three divisions, and it seemed like they were offering a lot of detail. And then I began to think, well, maybe they're going to pull this thing off. You know, the players had agreed to a prorated salary, and it just seemed like it was beginning to come together. But the last couple of weeks, it just seems like they're really far apart. And I'm just not sure if they're going to, it's like Zach said, you know, if they're going to pull this thing off by July 1st, they've got to move looks like to me the next few days, couple of days, because they've got to find a they're talking about having some sort of spring training before they start the season. I don't see how they can, you know, get much of a spring training in if they don't pull this thing off in 2-3 days. So I'm not real sure we're going to have baseball. And what you brought up about, you know, some of the higher paid players taking a chance on a on an injury on a on such a short season. That's a good point. So I'm not all that optimistic. If I had to bet now, I bet we don't see baseball this year.
Yeah, that's a gosh. I mean, rewind the clock 3 months ago, guys. I mean, did you ever think that anything like that was possible from you know, from an outbreak? You know, you just did. You didn't see that. One of these things that's there like clockwork every year. All of a sudden, when it's taken away from you, first of all, it's kind of a shock to it, but you're more so shocked by what's happening in your everyday life. But, you know, all of a sudden you're not going into an office and you're learning how to use Zoom. And I say learning how to use Zoom. Hell, Zach's probably known how to use Zoom for years. And guys like me and Russ here are just now catching up. I mean, Christ, I was still using Google Hangouts. That was my only go-to when I'm not doing a live show. But, you know, it's... You know, if there was the shock of what's happening in your everyday life, then you don't have something that, gosh, when you see something normal on TV, you kind of that feeling of comfort starts coming back because something normal is happening, and we don't have that. I've been back and forth on this, guys. I'll admit it, and that might be, you know, intellectual cowardice on my part, but there are some days I wake up and I read something. And I go, okay, you know what? They're talking, and you normally, you guys correct me if I'm wrong, but normally when the two sides are engaging in conversation, something happens. And when they're going to the pub to media before they're talking to each other, that usually shows a bad sign, right? So if you take, you know, the strikes that have had the strike shortened season, we were robbed of a World Series. You know, that we were finding out more through each side talking to the media than we were behind closed doors, and we find out something's happening here. So I've kind of felt both ways. I felt that, hey, they're engaging. I feel good about this. You know, I think by the time we get baseball back, I don't care if we get 80 games, 50 games. I just think as sports fans, even casual baseball fans, we'll be so goddamn happy to see it that I don't think we'll care how many games are left. But there is a reality to it. So, Zach, where are you? I mean, are you back and forth on this daily like me? Or are you kind of somewhere in between where you're – and I don't even know what kind of priority it is to us, guys, because I'll be honest with you. Baseball to me right now – and I love it. And I do look, I podcast all the time. If I didn't love it, I wouldn't be spending my time doing it. But right now it is not the highest priority for me. My mind is on some other things that I think feel like they're more important. Definitely. So I don't know how I feel about that. But Zach, how do you feel?
Yeah, I've gone back and forth. I think early on, I was optimistic about, like in March, I was optimistic about maybe like a Memorial Day start. Mm-hmm. But then as I saw, so I live in Chicago, as I kind of saw the situation evolve here, it became apparent pretty quickly that at least the government was taking the virus like very seriously, and they're acting very conservatively. So once I think pretty early, I kind of switched over to where at least most days, I feel like it's going to be tough to have a season. It's definitely going to be, it's impossible, I think, to have a season with any semblance of like normal fans. Chicago, I think, has banned gatherings of more than 50 people until there's a vaccine. So like maybe there'd be an exception for sporting events. The governor's come out and said he wants sports to come back. But it's going to be tough to have it be any semblance of normal. And I think the more you kind of see, like you said, that with the owners and the Players Association both kind of leaking things to the media before they tell each other what's going on, it seems like there's a lot of posturing, a lot of, you know, the owners trying to make the players look like the bad guys and vice versa. You know, different people have different opinions on who needs to shoulder the burden here. I think for me, it comes down on the people that own the business. Like, you're the ones that, you know, if it's operating, you take the profits, you take the loss. Mm-hmm. But it just seems like the negotiating tactics don't seem friendly. Like, it's almost like there's a curtain between them, and so they go to the third party media to kind of relay the message that they don't want to go tell the other side.
Yeah,
I don't know.
And you got to imagine. I mean, it happens. You know, it happens in politics all the time that you use that as a tactic, right? You know, it's not just that I'm talking to my buddy Ken Rosenthal because I'm not buddies with him. I want him to put this out here. So the other side hears it, essentially. And so they can kind of gauge where you're at without directly engaging with you. So, yeah, it's definitely a tactic that's being used. I don't like to see it. In fact, I would like, might sound nuts here, I would like to just know a little, but I would like to not hear a lot of it and just hear about it. Hear about it when an agreement's either reached or it's not, that we're either going to get baseball back or we're not. So let me talk to you guys about a little bit of the details behind the player's proposal, because what I find interesting, the fact that they want to go after more games and have that be prorated salary, I understand that, right? And that's in their best interest. I think everybody agreed initially, and I think it was a good gesture that they agreed to 82 games because they knew what was happening. They knew it was an outside force coming in and causing this. It wasn't either side. And so there was a pretty good feeling agreement there that we're going to agree to a half year's pay for half the games, right? That made sense to everybody. And I think later when, you know, it's learned that, you know what, we're not going to be able to play with people in the ballpark for a while. And you could certainly understand that owners paying 100% of their payroll while people aren't in the stands, and people aren't in the stands, it's not just about ticket sales, guys. You know this, right? It's about you know, everything, all the money that the people are spending inside the park, outside of the park. In the case of the Cardinals, for instance, you know, the ownership has their hands in all the businesses that are kind of surrounding there. You know, whether it's parking decks or whether it's Cardinals Nation, I mean, there's revenue there that's not coming in either. So you can certainly look, I don't believe the ownership group, ours or anybody else's, walks on water, but I understand the business side of this, and there's a reality to it. Are the guys going to starve to death? No, they're not. But anybody who's responsible for a business, and I'm sorry, but that's what this is, what it is. You have to put it on paper, and there is a line you have to recognize that we can't, this disrupts our plans perhaps in the future if we go beyond this point. So it's something we can't do. We can all lazily label greed on it. That's fine. But it's more complex than that. This isn't just a bean counter at the end of the day saying can't do it because I want to make X amount of profit for me. That's not what's happening here. It's risk reward that exists in business because it has to. And if you're not looking at it that way, then you're probably not running a very successful business. But your thoughts?
Yeah, for me, I mean, I totally agree. Like, get the business side. You see it all the time, just taking it out of the sports realm and just the general real world. When people aren't able to make money in a business, it goes away. You can only lose so long. There's a certain point where even so much loss in 1 year is kind of the end of a business. You see it all the time. So from like an ownership perspective, totally get that. Mm-hmm. I think the GMs have to think about that. And obviously, they do need to make money, or at least in this season, kind of survive to make money
right
in the future. I think where I get a little probably upset with the owners is just, one, the posturing to kind of put it on the players. It's like, it's a business decision whether you play or not. Like, if it makes economic sense to play whatever number of games, like, that's what the owners are going to do. But then to kind of come out the way they frame it, to where it's like, oh, where they're trying to kind of get the revenue sharing agreement, where they were trying to split revenue with the players and kind of pushing some of that, like you said, the risk reward aspect of owning a business to the players. I thought that was a little, I didn't like that. It's at least to me, it's part of owning the business. If you have to be able to pay your workers or your employees, in this case your players, and still be able to kind of make a profit off your business or survive with those contracts in place. So I didn't totally like that. I thought that was kind of them trying to snake out of some of the risk of owning the business by passing that.
Sure. Yeah.
The
yeah.
players. But I mean, I get why they would want to do it. Mm-hmm. I just think there's a little bit of accountability that maybe is missing from the ownership side, to where they've seen the value of these franchises, the revenue, the earnings go up for at least, you know, 20, 30 years, probably, especially in the last 15 to 20. And I think a lot of them probably thought that this kind of business was immune to softness, at least obviously to something like this. And nobody saw this coming, but I think they, to some extent, there was definitely I think they thought some immunity to downturns, and it's been a little eye-opening maybe to see how they've reacted and how they've tried to get us to turn on the players and in that light. But again, like you said, it's a business. I totally see why the owners are where they are. I do wish they'd open their financials a little more so we could kind of evaluate that better for ourselves. But at the end of the day, like, you can't ask them to go out and lose a bunch of money just for our entertainment. You wouldn't ask a restaurant to go lose a bunch of money just so you can eat there.
Yeah,
it's tough.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. You know, if there was more, and you know, we're not going to get it, but if there was more transparency, if nothing else, Russ, it would be to either prove the nickname DeWallet or disprove the nickname DeWallet, yeah. Because that's one nickname I'm just kind of getting tired of. And I know it sounds like I'm totally siding with the owners with every comp. I'm really not, because I understand this from the player's perspective too. You're physically doing the work for 82 games, right? That was the agreement. You're physically doing the work for 82 games, plus you're exposing yourself to more risk. I certainly understand why the players would expect to be compensated for essentially doing the same thing, right? That they had agreed in the beginning. So it's no different. But Russ, just your thoughts on that and to what Zach said.
Well, listen, I've thought that this posturing by the owners is seeing what they get the players to take. If they can, you know, they came up with the revenue sharing agreement after they backed off the prorated deal. Mm-hmm. Said, you know, we want you to take the prorated deal. The players said, okay. Then they said, no, wait. We're going to be losing money here, so why don't we do a revenue sharing deal? And the players, of course, really got upset about that, and they didn't want to have anything to do with that. And I thought the owners were doing this to posture themselves for the renegotiations of the next
CBA,
the
right?
Next agreement. Yeah. And I think they said, well, we can get the players to take. And I hate to be a conspiracy theorist, and I'm really not, but if we can get the players to take this now, we'd be easier to force it on them on the next players in the next agreement we come up with. And the players saw that. I think they saw what was happening because they were talking about revenue sharing,
right?
And they didn't want to open up the books if they're going to do revenue sharing. The players said, well, we're going to do revenue sharing, let's see the books. And they said, no, you know, so that's where we're at. I think that's what the owners were attempting to do there for a while, and it didn't hit with the players well. So I think we're to the point now where they're saying, well, you know, they came back to kind of a short prorated season now, so this is where we're at. So there's not a lot of trust between the players and the owners. We found that out. We found that out maybe a year sooner than we would have. I mean, this virus has caused everything to be hit, everything to be moved up a year, I think. And so that's my opinion. I think they tried to pull that off on the players. The players said no. And so here we are.
You know,
2-3 weeks from that proposal, and we're not any closer to a baseball season, really.
So, yeah, and that's a factor that's absolutely playing it's in play here, and that is the next bargaining agreement that's coming up, and I believe it's in 2022, and you better be damn certain that anything that they're doing right now, they have their eye on that, and it's right around the corner, mm-hmm. Russ. So that's a very good point. I want to talk a little bit about what their proposal was, though, and that's a 114-game season. This is coming from the player side, and we know it's a chance to make more money. I get that. But how do you guys feel? I'm going to go first here. 114-game season, when you start on June 30th, it pushes the regular season back into the end of October, which, you know, that means the playoffs and World Series are going into well into November, late November. It might even touch December. I'm not certain how the schedule shakes up because it's an expanded playoff now, right? So I just don't know how I feel about playing that late into the year, and how is that going to affect 2021, right? So that's my issue with that. Going all the way back to when this pandemic first started and they were trying to determine or talk about, gosh, when will we play? And how many games will we be able to get in? And so I've never been warm to the idea of extending it too late into the year, only out of worry of, gosh, how's that going to affect guys going into 21, Zach? I mean, what do you think about that?
Yeah, it'd be tough. For one, my first concern. You brought up a good point on the health. I didn't even consider that. My first concern would just be like, what do you do from like a weather perspective? Like if the Cubs are in the playoffs, you get some horrible weather.
First of all, don't say that.
So
first of all, Zach, don't say that. Don't you ever say that, that the Cubs are going to be in the playoffs. Okay. We'll just establish that right now.
Well, okay. And then if the White Sox are in the playoffs, so we'll go with them. You get some horrible weather up here. So, it's just such, so I don't know, like, do they go to neutral site for the year? How much does that carry over? I saw some early proposals talking kind of like a Super Bowl format almost, where you like, you just pick a warm weather site, in Florida, Texas, or California, but you can't do that for the whole playoffs. At least I wouldn't think.
It would be odd. That for would sure.
be, yeah. So that would be tough. In terms of getting ready for the next season, yeah, I mean, I assume, so it pushes free agency back, obviously. It pushes all of the kind of recovery and rebuild back. So now you go into the next year instead of having, I would assume, the first month or so after the season, they're probably all kind of in a wind down, rest and recover mode. So you move that back. We've seen with the Cardinals guys kind of struggle to, Carlos Martinez is the one that comes to mind, but guys kind of struggle to build up in the off-season workouts to what they need to be at in spring training. Now you're giving them less time to do that. It would be tough. I think it's a big risk. It's a risk just to get back this season, but then I think you carry some of that same risk into 2021, where we're asking guys right now to do a three-week spring training after being off for two or three months. It's a little, I mean, I think probably less risky over the winter, but it's kind of the same, in the same vein. And I would think the players, I'm surprised that they would want to go that late, because obviously, like, they're the ones thinking about their body, so they must have some comfort with that. But it would seem to me like I'd expect probably pitchers particularly to have some injuries or struggles early on the following season if we played into November.
Yeah, it would definitely be a good test of the World Series hangover theory, right? If you're playing a game that even get close to touching December, that's to me, it's just not something I want to see. And I want to see a normal offseason, as much as grueling as it can be sometimes, especially when the Cardinals don't do anything. It's an even longer offseason. This is, I tell you guys, it could have come at a worse time. There's no good time for something like this to happen. But when you're on the doorsteps of a new collective bargaining agreement, now you're having this squabble while the country's hurting and we could use something. The American pastime, if it came back, it has a chance to come back in a really powerful way. And I know it's entertainment. It is not life or death, but there are people that have incomes and families and everything that do depend on it. So it is important, and we know how important sports are to the city of St. Louis. And I love to hear people say it's not a sports town, because you must be living under a damn rock or on the Illinois side, maybe. But it's important, and to get something back that resembles normal, I think would be great. And I think for the long term health of the game, it would be great too, because we know that baseball has. Definitely, it has trended downward as far as popularity. Not with us, not within our circles, but if you look at it nationwide, we know that there's NBA markets differently. We know the NFL. Now, the NFL's hit a speed bump, I think, in popularity just because of the league and new rules, and let's just say Roger Goodell. And we don't want to talk about the NFL in St. Louis for sure, because we have an issue there big time. But baseball has a chance right now to come back in a very powerful and positive way, and I think it would bode well for their long-term future. At least out, not maybe not long-term, maybe it's too strong of a statement, but I think even short-term, out, 23, 24, I think it would be a great thing for the sport to come back in a meaningful way, in a positive way, when the country is not only suffering from a pandemic, but now we're suffering from what's happened in Minnesota. And so it has a really golden opportunity right now, and I just hope they don't screw it up.
Well, let me tell you, I think I have a couple of thoughts on this 114 game season. One, I don't believe if we had 114 game season with the with the postseason and everything like that, and going into late November or early December, I'm not sure they could get it completed. I really expect this virus to have another comeback in the, when the weather turns cold. It might shut down some teams before they even get to the while they're in the middle of the postseason or toward the end of the regular season. But the other positive thing about it, they could pull it off, is that with so many sports shut down, and I don't really expect to see a college football or NFL season this year, because I just think I just can't see them pulling that off. If baseball could go forward, and if they could get the season in and end it whenever it's in November or December, I think it would help the sport a lot. It's the only major sport on TV from July through the 1st of December. I'm not sure the other major sports, college football, NFL, are going to have much of a season this year. So it could be a positive thing if they can pull it off.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree. Now, I haven't given much thought to what the NFL is going to come back like. I'm a Bears fan for one. So Zach, I know we were talking before we hit record button that when it's not happening, we tend to not pay attention as much. The Bears are hard to pay attention to at all, even when the season's going on. And I grew up in Central Illinois, so I had to pick. You know, the Bears were my only local team at the time. The St. Louis Cardinals football team had moved on. And so my growing up, all I had was the Bears. And I kind of followed a family thing anyway. So my guilty thing is, yes, I root for one Chicago team. They're very hard, as every Chicago team, they're very hard to root for. But it is what it is. I was actually starting to enjoy the XFL, to be honest with you. I know it wasn't as polished as the NFL, but I was enjoying it. And, then St. Louis got a cup of coffee with professional football again, and now it's gone again. So a little depressing, but I couldn't agree more, Russ. I mean, I think that I've said this all along, Jim, and I've talked about it several times on here. Baseball has a golden opportunity in front of them right now, whether they they realize it. They know that. An interesting thing is, guys, I want to talk about a case study that baseball could be watching right now. But before I do that, I just want to remind everybody, you can find us on twobirdsonabat.com. Please click the subscribe to the podcast. It takes 30 seconds to do so. And best of all, it's completely free. You can find us on Twitter at Birds on a Bat Show. Find us on Facebook at Two Birds on a Bat. On Instagram at Two Birds on a Bat Show. You can also find us on lineupmedia.fm, home of Yo Radio, the newest streaming platform for your mobile device. Download it for free today. Okay, well, I want to talk about a case study they could be looking at, right? And I'm sure baseball has been studying this and seeing what's taking place in the KBO. That's the Korean Professional Baseball League. So, you know, I've said all along, like, there is, and I think the Japanese League is starting up, I believe, at the end of this month. So a couple interesting things for baseball to be watching, and that is, how is the KBO handling this? What kind of protocols they have in place? What happens if a player contracts a virus on a team? What happens to that team? What happens to that player? It's very interesting to watch all of this. Now, right now, I have not been able to, I have a bandwidth time problem, just like you guys probably do, where I can only pay attention to so much. I've not heard of anything breaking down in the KBO. Have you guys heard anything about that at all?
No, I haven't. I'm not sure that the Koreans, from what I understand, were on top of this thing quicker than we were. And got ahead of it, so it might be coming off. But I haven't heard it. I haven't even watched the game, Ron, yet. So I don't know. But I haven't heard anything that's gone sour on them.
Yeah. And I haven't either, but I think Zach, right? I mean, it's got to be an interesting thing for baseball over here to be keeping an eye on. How is it handled? Because they have clubhouses too, right? So
you get a playbook. So, I mean, like Russ said, there was, they were ahead on a lot of the testing. I think they had better, just like kind of contact tracing capabilities right when this came out. So they were able to contain the virus a lot quicker than most countries have been able to. You're getting a playbook where it's like they obviously, I guess I don't know for sure, but I would assume that they have some kind of testing protocol in place. They have a response if somebody tests positive. Maybe it hasn't gone wrong to the point where they've needed to try any of that. And so I think that would kind of be the next step, is like when you do actually get an athlete who catches it, then what? Because it's one thing to have the protocols, and then it's another thing for the protocol to work. But it should, at least, if nothing else, be a pretty good, thorough outline of what, from a health perspective, what the MLB needs to be thinking about. I don't know how the TV ratings and TV revenue flows into MLB, but you have people waking up to watch some of these games in the morning. They're re-airing them in the afternoon. People are watching those. I've seen a little bit. I haven't seen a ton, but the people want to see baseball. It's like, I don't think anybody has any real like long-term interest in the Korean baseball league, but if you can get sports on TV, people are going to watch. So I think, like you said, Russ, this is a good, I think it is a big opportunity where if baseball can get back on, you're going to be the one live sport on TV. And I think that has a huge benefit, at least potential benefit, to kind of catch up on some of the losses maybe that they saw prior to getting started.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see, and I'm sure they're sharing plans back and forth, how the Japanese league's coming back as well. They'll be playing in empty ballparks. So a little odd, I've caught an inning or two here and there when I remember that it's on or I see a replay. It's almost like people say it's like, and I thought initially, man, this is odd. You know, nobody's in the stands. And then, I've seen a Marlins game before, and I've seen the Rays. It's really not that much of a stretch. I'm kidding. I'm partially kidding. I actually went to a game in Tampa Bay once, and they were playing the Red Sox. It was on a Tuesday. I was in the upper deck, and I could hear the umpire calling balls and strikes, which is not normal. You shouldn't be able to hear that, but I could totally hear it. And it just made me laugh. I mean, it was the Red Sox. The Red Sox were good at that point, and the Tampa Bay had just come off of a playoff run, so it's just kind of odd. But anyway, so there's a couple interesting things out there for them, I think, for all of us to look at and see how are those situations handled if they were to come up in one of these other leagues. But and then they got to worry about themselves right around the corner. But guys, I want to talk a little bit about the Cardinals. I think we've covered what's happening here. I don't want to give it a rating 1 to 10 if I think baseball's coming back or not, because right now I'm still going to probably give you a 5 or a 6. And I think a lot of us are probably feeling about the same way. Russ is probably, listening to Russ, he sounds a little less optimistic, but that's okay. I'm probably going to hover somewhere in the middle, because right now, it seems to shift on me every day. Mm-hmm. All right.
I'm less than a 5, Ron, at this point.
I figured that. Yeah, you're pretty clear on that one. All right, so I want to talk a little bit about just what we were seeing from our Cardinals team. And then where we think they might be by the time they get back, guys. But before we do that, just want to like to thank our featured partners this week, starting with Mike and his wonderful crew at Adams Smokehouse, located on Watson Road. Adams is the home of the best barbecue in St. Louis. And right now they do curbside contactless pickup and delivery only, thanks to him and his crew. Check them out at Adams Smokehouse. St. Louis, here's your cue. Make sure to check out our friend, ChristianJacobs.com. Dr. Kristen Jacobs would like to remind everybody that every day is Skin Cancer Awareness Day. And make sure to check out her Ooh La La Spa Anti-Aging and Wellness Center. That's our good friend, Dr. Kristen Jacobs. So baseball's back for the Gators Baseball Academy. So don't forget, check out our friends at GatorsBaseballAcademy.com, located in both Missouri and Illinois. If you're looking for the right organization to help your youngster with a game of baseball or softball, look no further than the Gators Baseball Academy and their four-pillar system. To learn more, check them out at GatorsBaseballAcademy.com. All right, gentlemen. Said it on here before, a little bit of a repeat for those who listen to the show. I typically am not the most interested in spring training, right? I like hearing about the news. I try to watch as many games as possible, because typically what happens, there's not a lot of mystery on the Cardinals roster most spring trainings, right? We kind of know who our starting eight are going to be most years. The only mystery might be, is there a spot available in the rotation, or who's going to fill out the bullpen? I mean, I don't know if you guys agree or disagree with that, but it feels like most years that's what we're facing. So there's not a lot of intrigue or mystery for spring training. This year was way different for me, and it probably was for a lot of other fans, because we had what I feel was legit open competition somewhat, right? Maybe Tyler O'Neill had a little bit of a lead in here, but I think we had a competition for outfield spots. And we got to see Dylan Carlson come up and get a healthy dose of playing time in spring training. We got to see Lane Thomas. I mean, we got to see some youngsters come up and I felt like they were competing for positions, and man, a lot of them came out swinging, Tyler O'Neill included. And it was, mm-hmm. it was exciting watching these young guys. And then all of a sudden, you know, everything stops. But Russ, what were you seeing in spring training this year? And were you watching it a little bit more than usual because of this?
Yeah, I was wanting to see what Dylan Carlson looked like. We heard so much about him. And, you know, and I was impressed with what little bit we got to see of Lane Thomas last year before he got hurt.
Right.
And so, yeah, exactly as you say, the outfield looked like it was kind of an open competition. You know, and would Harrison Bader, you know, be able to come back and save, you know, save his spot on the roster? You know, he was the – 2 years ago, he was the darling of the on the team. You know, everybody was really high on him, and he had hopefully it was just a sophomore slump last year, but would he be able to bounce back? So I think in the outfield, there were a lot of questions. There was. And you're right. Usually, and so I'm not usually all that interested in the spring training, except I'd like to watch to see how some of the guys are going to be in AAA are playing, just because they might be guys coming up later in the season or something. But this year, there was some real mystery about who was going to end up, you know, being on the roster, who's going to be playing, starting in the outfield on opening day. You know, question, would Dylan Carlson be on the roster? Would he be on the opening day roster? Would he be parked down in Memphis waiting for a call up later in the year? So I think that's exactly the way I felt, Ryan.
Yeah. What about you, Zach?
Yeah, I was definitely more interested. And I liked that Thomas, O'Neill, Bader was hitting well too. They all kind of came out firing. Seemed like that was the main competition was going to be, you know, I think there was a question as to whether one or two spots in the outfield were open, whether, you know, you kind of viewed Bader as entrenched in center if you thought that spot was open, but then Fowler and Wright, again, another one that may be open, maybe not, and then left field was obviously the wide open one. So it's good to see those young guys can all come out hot and start making a case. I backed myself into, and maybe this is just the pessimist in me, but I backed myself into thinking that Fowler was definitely going to be starting in right field no matter what, just because they're paying him.
Mm-hmm.
And that O'Neill was probably going to be in left, and Carlson was probably going to be in AAA waiting for a call up, just because he hadn't spent a lot of time down there at all prior to, like, he got a cup of coffee, I guess, in AAA in 2019, but it wasn't like he had spent enough time down there to like hit a AAA slump and see how he responded, which I feel like is something that Jose probably wants to see a lot of those guys go through. I'm probably just making that up, but just seems like kind of a Mo thing to think. So I was interested, and it kind of got to where they were all hitting well, and Fowler was lagging behind, Carpenter was lagging behind, and it was just kind of like, well, we're going to kind of end up with the same thing as what we had at the end of last year anyways. So good to see everybody come out. I don't totally trust that the team, the manager and the general manager, and I guess Mosaic's the president of baseball operations. I don't totally trust that side of management is making decisions independent of the contracts. And that makes it a little more frustrating watching spring training, especially when the guys who I think aren't going to get a chance right away do well.
Yeah, it can be maddening. And you're right, Zach. I mean, and, you know, look, we've heard it before, you know, there were people available over the last couple of years. You know, they traded for Paul Goldschmidt. Great. You know, got him locked up long-term, but there were other names still available that could help the team out. They didn't do it. So, you know, stuff like that can be maddening enough, but the Cardinals do spend money, but they've had a couple instances recently. You can probably pick some out of the past too, that just haven't gone well. Right. And so I think they're a little snake bit from that, but you're right. I mean, and I don't know how I would do it either. Honestly, it's easy for us to be fans and criticize these moves or non-moves or these roster decisions or the lineup card. It's another thing having to do it, know that you've got a lot of resource committed to somebody, and when do you pull the plug on it? You know, like, when do you say it's a loss? It's been a disastrous contract. You know, we just need to eat it. I don't know. That's going to be different for just about every team, right? If you're the Yankees or somebody else that has deep pockets, we've seen them pull the plug on this stuff well before the Cardinals would ever even think about it, right? And so I know it's going to vary for every team. I know it's got to be a difficult decision. And all we can hope for is that, you know, contracts like Dexter Fowler, nobody knew what was going to happen with this Brett Cecil thing. I mean, to be honest with you, I think that we thought it was a pretty solid signing maybe when it happened, but it's just, it has been probably, you could argue, maybe the worst one ever, right? But, you know, it's got to be a hard choice. But, you know, the other argument is, and I tend to default to this one more often, is that we want to see our best players take that field routinely, right? Whoever gives you the best chance to win. And look, as much as a personal fan I am of Dexter Fowler, to me, it's just, I would hate for it to be just a obligatory pencil in daily on that lineup just because of a contract. And I think a lot of us would say the same thing. We don't want to see that. There's a reality to it that we don't have to face. But I certainly think that I want the best outfield out there day in and day out. I don't know. I mean, it's unfair to say these guys are better, right? Because Dylan Carlson has not been in a major league game yet. And he's only faced major league pitching in spring training. And you can probably make the case that that's not the same thing. But I certainly was enjoying what I was seeing as far as the competition. And I was excited to watch a spring training game, which doesn't happen to me very often, guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I was looking forward to it too. And, you know, I was looking at Dylan Carlson, Ron, and I was thinking, well, I hope this doesn't turn into another Colby Rasmus, you know, cause everybody was so high trying to get him up. And then when he mm-hmm. came up, he never really panned out. You know, he looked good. He looked good out there. He could run. He could, you know, look like he should be able to hit, and they kept calling him a 5-tool athlete. And so, you know, and I'm not saying that Carlson, it was looking at him, I was, you know, he looked like, I was thinking, oh, he's going to turn out like Colby Rasmus. But I was thinking, I hope this is another Colby Rasmus type situation. So that's one of the things I kept in mind, you know, when I was thinking about, it just seemed like we couldn't wait till we got Colby Rasmus up into the major leagues. And, you know, it never really worked out.
Yeah, that was, another one I can think of, and I know there are different types of players, but Colby Rasmus is one of those. Look, this is going to be a nitpicky thing. This is just ridiculous. I don't even need to say it. But we all have these quirky personal things about us, about, you know, what we want to see from our players. There are a lot of players throughout the league that can sport a flat bill on their hat. Colby Rasmus looked terrible in it. And it wasn't only his decision-making in the games and kind of his attitude towards the end of his Cardinal tenure. Somebody just should have went up to him and just bent the bill. Lance Lynn could sport a flat bill. Jake Arrieta could sport a flat bill. Colby Rasmus looked absolutely ridiculous. And if I was his teammate and I was a veteran, I'd went up and I said, give me your damn hat. You're not going out on the field like this again. I'm bending it because you look ridiculous. You look ridiculous. Yeah. So his face was too small for a flat bill. I'm sorry. I know it's a ridiculous thing. Zach's probably never heard of that before. But that's just that's my weirdness. That's the weirdness coming out in me right now. He was a disappointing player for sure. The other one that kind of he reminds me of a bit is J.D. Drew. J.D. Drew was talented as hell. We heard he was comparable to Mickey Mantle as far as the tools he had. And it just never rose to that level. When he was with the Cardinals, it was, again, he reminded me so much of Colby Rasmus because you wanted to see more emotion from him. You wanted to see more passion from him and just better game-making decision because he had the ability, but it just never came out. And ultimately, it was, what a funny story. Signed by the Phillies, didn't want to play for the Phillies, played in the independent league. I think he played for the St. Paul Saints for a year, and the Cardinals picked him up in next year's draft. Yeah. It was that, oh my God, you know, we got Mark McGwire on this team. We've got Edgar Renteria. We just traded for that offseason. And so we got this loaded team. And J.D. Drew's never arrived like we wanted him to. However, he was traded as part of the deal for Adam Wainwright. So it all worked out in the end. And so,
that turned out well. They also picked up Was that Jason Marquis came in that trade?
And Ray King, yeah, that's right. And they gave away, I think, Ray. Eli Marrero was the other piece. Zach, are we showing our age yet?
Yeah. So I was looking back. This is probably more of a knock on me, but I did not remember the Colby Rasmus look. So I just had Google Images up, digging back to remember what he looked like. And that was only like, what, I had, God, 8 years ago now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now I'm showing my age.
Am I wrong? Am I wrong?
No, it didn't work.
It really didn't. And Jim's probably I'm gonna get a text sometime. I don't know if Jim will ever go back and listen to these that he's not on, but if he does, I imagine I'm gonna get a text. What the hell were you talking about bills on a hat for? I'm never giving you the controls of this show again. All right, guys, just kind of round it out. I want to go to the Patterson Tire and Service text line here. The Patterson Tire and Service text line allows us to hear from the fans. Please give our friends at Patterson Tire and Service an opportunity for your business. Patterson Tire and Service is a whole lot more than a tire store. It's also specialized in automotive repair. Give them a call at 618-797-6711 for a quick quote and set up an appointment today, and head down to 3718 Highway 111. That's 3718 Highway 111 in Granite City, Illinois, to find out why they are the best in the business. That's Patterson Tire and Service, a whole lot more than a tire store. So a text comes in, and as usual, this is just forwards to me. There's no name attached to it, but I think it's an interesting question. We touched on it a little bit earlier. So given the situation that we're facing this year, an interrupted season with a possibility of a no season, let me go to you first here on this one, Zach. Like, what do you think we're going to see as we step back into baseball, we assume in 2021 and beyond? What that's happened now is going to permanently change the game going forward?
That's a tough one. I mean, I think in general, I think you're just going to see a lot less kind of close personal contact for a while. So I don't know, like, there's not a whole lot about like baseball on the field that I think would change a ton, but there's probably going to be some, maybe minor. I don't think like everybody's going to do it, but I would bet there's going to be some changes in the dugout where maybe guys are, you know, kind of doing less of the handshake stuff, doing, I mean, you see like Seeds, can they still do chewing tobacco in games? I know you can't national games, but probably less like spitting or more controlled spitting of things. And I think it's just going to be kind of those subtleties that like, I think watching a game, you don't notice as much, but like, I remember back, so I played just through high school and I wasn't very good, but just kind of the stuff you do in the dugout, the kind of the screwing around, the kind of fun off to the side all the time. So I think that's what, if something's going to like meaningfully change, I think that's where it's going to happen. On the field, I don't know that there's a ton. I think you're still going to have pitchers that lick their fingers before every pitch. You're still going to have the rosin. Like, nobody's that close. Out playing the field, but probably the closest you get is when the first baseman's holding a guy on at first, and like, that's not going away. So I don't know.
You know, if you guys have ever opened up a new box of baseballs, you know that they're all kind of in wrappers. What's going to be hilarious is to see the umpire have to take a ball out of the wrapper in his bag, or just take a box out and not touch it and hand it to the pitcher, and the pitcher has to take the wrapper off. That would be funny to me. Just like a batter arguing with a robot umpire here in a couple of years. That's going to be funny to me too. But yeah. Russ, how do you feel about that question? They're basically asking, okay, changes in the game are inevitably coming from this year. But
let's say they play baseball this year. Let's say I'm being extremely pessimistic and they do pull off a season. And this new league concept they have of three divisions, mixing everyone up in it the way they did it. If they do that, and that turns out to be really popular, if they really get the ratings are really good, the fans seem to enjoy it, I just wonder going forward if they would consider moving forward with that type of division if it worked out. The DH might be, you know, they were talking about putting the DH in this year. If that works out, we might see a permanent DH. So that's what I would keep an eye on if we have a season this year, see how fans react to seeing I forgot what division the Cardinals were in, Ron, in that new mix-up, if it was going to be
– just the Central.
The Central. but they were going to be with some American League teams, weren't they?
Yeah. So here's how I'm going off memory here, guys. So don't fillet me here for getting this wrong. The Central was going to be comprised of St. Louis, Chicago Cubs, Chicago White Sox, Minnesota, Detroit, Cincinnati, Milwaukee. Come on, Ron. Come on. You can do this. Kansas City, Cleveland, and Atlanta.
Atlanta. Okay.
Atlanta. And then Pittsburgh was going to move over to the east, which kind of geographically, you're like, what the hell? That doesn't make any sense. But that might, that could have potentially been more of a competitive balance type of thing.
Right.
You know, and so it's an interesting way, I think, if they wanted to get a year in this year. Hey, look, if you're going to screw around and tinker with anything temporarily, right now is the time to do it. Whenever we've had big rule changes or shifts in the game, think about it, guys. And I pulled this reference out too much, but when the season was shortened in 94. Now, I think in 94, they already had the new six divisions set up. I could be wrong. Could be a year off on that. I always thought it was 95 for some reason. But look, when a big change in the game happened, those things happened. And then you had regular interleague play happening following an interruption. So if there's ever a time to tinker around and do that, I think we would understand that right now. And I think there'd be patience for it today. I don't know if that would be patients would be there long term or not. But you know, and honestly, nationally, I don't know how popular that would be for the game, to keep things very regional and you don't really touch the other cities or coasts throughout a season. This year, I think everybody would accept it. Long term, I just don't know how that works, Zach. I mean, what do you think? I mean, from what I understand, those teams don't intermingle much on a regular season because you had an even number of teams in these divisions, each have 10. So there's no need for you to play randomly a West team or an East team. I just long term, I don't see that as happening.
Yeah, I think the three division thing is temporary. I think the way the schedule's set up and the way it's been done, you know, for as long as I've been watching, is you play within your division like way too much to have that many that many teams. But what I wouldn't be surprised is if we saw like a two-team expansion and then some kind of realignment, maybe to like mimic what the NFL does, might be one way to go. Cause I do think there is value in having, kind of both leagues stretch, you know, coast to coast. I think, you know, the way MLB does it compared to like the NBA, you get just weird disparities in like kind of the quality of the league when you're geographically, at least that, I mean, that's really the only reference I have. I guess hockey is sort of that way too, but I don't follow hockey enough to know if that same pattern's there. But I could see two-team expansion and then moving to within, have two 16-team leagues with four divisions of four. Obviously, you'd cut down on like in-division games because you'd only have three division opponents. You'd cut that down some. I think the question would be, where do you go with those two teams? But now that minor league's contracting, I think MLB is getting a little more control of the minor league system. I think they probably have more ability to work that out, and you might see something like, I don't know, Portland always comes to mind for me as a possible team. I think Charlotte, maybe Nashville.
Really?
Potential, but
Charlotte. I don't know. They got competition with Cincinnati and Charlotte because evidently they claim this as part of their sports market, although it's like an 8-hour drive away, but that's fine.
Yeah. I'm sure like a lot of, I always thought that a lot of people in Charlotte were probably just Braves fans, but then every time I see one of those maps or I look up the drive to Charlotte to Atlanta, like there is a pretty big gap there. And I don't think you can just throw a team in a city, and get them, you know, get them to back it. We saw that, not to talk about the NFL, but you saw that with LA, the Chargers and Rams now just don't have the fan bases that they had in there.
Well, let me give you a perfect example of, so first of all, if you're native to North Carolina, you're a Braves fan, for the most part, from my experience of living out here. It's a very transient city. You have a lot of Northerners that live down here now, and not just within Charlotte, but all the suburb cities around it. And there are a ton of Yankees, Mets fans that I know personally down here now. but it's a mix. So if you look at markets that have opened up to that, let's just do one like in Miami, where, you know, there are a lot of Northerners that live in Florida, and we know what's happened with the attendance and the acceptance in a place like Miami has been a struggle at times. So, and it has been with the Rays too, quite frankly. So, Charlotte being sandwiched in between DC, which, you know, you've got the Orioles, yep. You got the Nationals, you got the Braves. Hey, look, I would love to see Major League Baseball here in Charlotte. It'd be awesome for me personally. I'd still be a Cardinals fan. I'd root against them when they played each other. But I think Charlotte would, honestly, it would be a stretch. I would think that the possibilities could exist in Vegas. I know Portland has been a city that's come up, and you also have to consider Montreal as well.
Yeah. But, yeah, Montreal, I think, would be starving to get theirs back if they got the chance.
Sure, yeah. You know, my answer to that question was going to be the DH, and Russ stole it from me, so Russ gets the sound for stealing what I was going to say. I think the most noticeable thing on the field, the change that we're gonna notice in baseball the most, is going to be the DH in the National League. I think when it comes here this year, when it's universal, I feel it's just not going away, and I think the Players Union will fully back that, because basically what it opens up, Zach, is it opens up 15 more jobs in baseball that aren't there today, and that's better for the players. We can point to countless examples, but Albert Pujols doesn't get a 10-year contract to a non-DH team. Miguel Cabrera doesn't get extended to a non-DH team. Nelson Cruz would be have a hard time finding a job if there wasn't a DH. We know this. So it's coming. The National League Central is the last holdout on the DH, it seems. So I think once it gets here, I don't think it's going away. I think that's going to be the change we're going to notice the most. And you know what, guys, in 5 or 6 years, we're not going to care anymore. We're going to be used to it, and it's going to be what it is. And as much as I personally like the style of baseball that I get to watch all year long, and that is the National League style, I know it's going away. So my view on it is just rip the damn Band-Aid off and get it over with.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we traded Jose Martinez, but
yeah,
you know,
yeah. Well, you're right. The tradition. I'm a traditionalist, and I haven't been much for the DH, but I see it. If this thing pulls off this year, if they do it, I feel like that's what we're going to have after this year. We're going to have we'll probably have the DH, and you know, I can adjust. I can live with it. At one time, I thought there were too many playoff teams, so they expanded to the second wild card. I didn't think that was a great idea, but I kind of like it now. So yeah. You know, you get used to it.
Well, you know, I had a hard time getting used to routine interleague play because I liked that mystery of the National League and the American League not coming together until the end of the year and them not knowing each other very well. And we know the All-Star game at that time wasn't competitive. It was just a showcase. It was an exhibition game. So I liked that mystery, but I got over it real quick. And once in a while, it's okay to see, you know, look, we wouldn't have had Albert back in St. Louis last year. If it weren't for it. So there's some good things that have come about. So, you know, we've got a chance to see players like Griffey and Ichiro when they were in the American League. We wouldn't have been able to, I know Griffey was traded and Ichiro eventually played for the Marlins, but look, we got to see them in their prime, or at least a chance to, at a point in their career that we normally wouldn't have. We got to see Mike Trout in St. Louis. So there's been some great things that have come about having interleague play. The DH is going to bring something else, and it's going to bring in a little bit different style, but you know, hey, look, we could have a Frank Thomas type of player in our future, and Edgar Martinez or somebody else that is, you know, does really well at that position and takes to it and kind of leaves their stamp on it like, you know, David Ortiz did. So there's always that possibility. But 15 new jobs in baseball, I think, is inevitable. I think it's going to happen. All right, gentlemen, I know we've been on here for almost an hour, and so I don't want to take up too much more of your time late this evening. But I want to thank both of you for joining me tonight. It's been a really interesting conversation. A lot of we live in bizarro world these days, but it's nice to unplug for about an hour and talk about the game again, even under extreme circumstances. But Zach, I know you're working on, you have a new podcast for Birds on the Black, and the name of it, I saw the flag behind you. It just says Nerds, but what is the official name of this?
The official name is Nerds on the Black.
Nerds on the Black. I love
co-opting,
that.
Co-opting most of the website name, but
yeah. So I don't know how many episodes you are in on that, and I'll have to download that. So I encourage everybody else to do the same thing. That's Nerds on the Black. You can find them if you look on your podcast app under Birds on the Black. They've got a lot of good stuff on there. A friend of the show, contributor for Bow Ties and Bullshit, Kyle Reese. You can also find him on their Prospects After Dark. Tara Wellman, I know, and Alex Crisafulli do Chirps. And I hope I'm not leaving anybody else out there, but it's a good group of folks there, and I've become friends with a lot of them, so including Zach. So I appreciate you tonight, Zach. Where can everybody find you out there on Twitter?
Twitter is ZJ Gifford. I'm probably right now a little less of a baseball account than I normally am. So hopefully.
Okay, so everybody wait a month.
I think we all are, but yeah, ZJ Gifford on Twitter. And like you said, at birdsontheblack.com.
And Russ, they can find you not only on Twitter at Uncle Frank, and I'll let you give your handle in a second, but I know that you you blog for the Two Birds on a Bat bloggers. And I had that right? Redbird Rants was your other home.
Redbird Rants is the other one. And right now, Redbird Rants, I know we're focusing on the upcoming draft. So there's a lot of us, we're trying to get stuff out about potential draft picks, especially that first pick. You know, the Cardinals get the 21st pick this year. And so there's a lot of stuff being put out there. So if anyone out there listening wants to read something about ideas we have and who that 21st pick might be, check us out there.
All right. Well, again, thank you, gentlemen, for joining me tonight. It's been a very fun conversation. Hopefully, if we can ever get back together again sometime, we can talk about actually baseball as it's happening. But until then, you can find me at TR_Ron75 out there on Twitter. And you can check us out here, right here on Two Birds on a Bat every Tuesday for Ruffled Feathers. Tomorrow, the crew will be coming at you with Bull Ties and Bullshit. That's Mo's Algorithm, Jim, and Kyle Reese. And on Thursday, the flagship show, the big show, Jim Cromer and Benji Molina. And so we love you all so much. We'll talk to you very soon. Go Birds!